Good evening. In the news tonight, the presidential election recount is underway, where Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton by narrow margins. A major victory for water protectors in North Dakota. The Dakota Access Pipeline will not cross near sacred land. And Fidel Castro reached his final resting place while New Yorkers paid tribute to the revolutionary leader over the weekend. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Monday, December 5th, 2016. The system is rigged, says Donald Trump, except when he wins the election. That's what activists are saying in defense of a recount vote in key battleground states spearheaded by Green Party presidential candidate Dr. Jill Stein. Katie Hilton, who came to New York 12 years ago as a Fulbright scholar, came to hear Dr. Stein speak across the street from the Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue. She holds a sign. It says, "Clean politics, climate action." The other side of her sign says, "We the people, we are immigrants."
We're all immigrants, all of us. Everybody.
Hilton is nervous about the Trump presidency. She looks back to the day after the election.
We had to go to the airport, so I went to get a sandwich, and the only thing I heard when I went out was this big fat white man with a cup of coffee who laughed when a Mexican walked past and said, "Ha, you can all go back to Mexico now, we're building that wall, ha ha ha." And the guy, you know, he looked Irish-American. He's probably got a granny. If I met him in a bar, he'd be happy to tell me that, oh, you know, I'm Irish too. So I really can't understand these.
Hilton says she's so angry she can hardly speak. Daniela Liebling is an activist from Brooklyn. She holds a sign which reads, "Stand up and be counted." She is out on Fifth Avenue working on the recount effort, the Green Party effort to ensure that elections in New York and elsewhere are fair and just.
The Green Party has long been calling for voting reform and electoral reform. We've been calling for that on many levels. Not only to properly count the votes, which our country does not do, not only the votes are stolen, but they're also lost through negligence and inability to do a job that they're supposed to be done well.
This was the case in Brooklyn.
Yes, exactly. It certainly was, and Jill talked about that during her campaign. That exact case. So I'm here because the Green Party not only wants our votes counted, but we also want instant runoff voting, so that we don't have to have a system where everyone's afraid to vote for the candidate they want because they're worried that they're going to cause a worse, or quote-unquote, worse candidate to win. We want instant runoff voting and ranked choice voting so that...
Like in Maine.
Like in Maine, that Maine just approved, yes. And we want, you know, ultimately a much, much fairer voting system, which we don't have. The Greens have been talking about this. Everyone's acting like it's such a surprise that Jill Stein is talking about this. We've been talking about this forever, and we've been advocating it for it forever. And if we can't have a fair and not corrupt voting system in our country, then how dare we call ourselves a democracy?
Dr. Jill Stein is leading the Green Party effort to recount votes in battleground states of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. That's where Donald Trump held a razor-thin margin over Hillary Clinton. In Wisconsin, Trump beat Clinton by only 22,000 votes, and the paper ballot recount is underway in Wisconsin in all 72 counties. It began on Thursday. This even though pro-Trump super PACs tried for a temporary order to stop the counting. In Michigan, Trump lawyers tried to stop the statewide recount, but the Stein camp filed in federal court, and a U.S. district judge ordered the paper ballot recount there to begin today. Roughly 4.8 million votes were cast. Trump won the state by about 10,700 votes, or 0.2 of a percentage point over Clinton. Pennsylvania is a different story, though, because there are no paper ballots. In Pennsylvania, there are touchscreen machines. They are susceptible to manipulation and hacking, so the Green Party wants a forensic examination of those ballot boxes. By Friday, Trump's lead over Clinton in Pennsylvania shrank to 49,000 votes from 71,000 votes. The count may shift further with overseas ballots and provisional ballot changes. The recount effort, though, in Pennsylvania is being stymied. Green Party presidential candidate Dr. Stein says, unfortunately, in Pennsylvania, the election system and the court system is politically entrenched and has been fighting the recount effort at every step.
For example, the Trump campaign has filed now to call for 27,000 affidavits in 9,000 voting precincts in order to verify the vote, in order to proceed with a recount in any precinct. This is an absolutely ridiculous and obscene form of bureaucratic obstruction. In addition, $1 million bond was going to be imposed on 100 voters who were calling for a statewide recount. Add to that, the court date was being advanced to a time at which it would be impossible to provide the evidence that would be required in that court date. So, to make a long story short, it's clear that the fix was in against a verified vote in the state of Pennsylvania.
Like so many other Americans, I don't know whether my vote was counted.
Pennsylvania voter Susan Finn is a registered independent voter, mother of three. She petitioned for a recount. She wants to ensure that her vote is counted because her official married name failed to register where she voted. Trump's lawyers were successful in blocking a recount.
I followed all the rules, but I still left my polling place with much uncertainty about whether my vote would be counted and whether other citizens would have the same unsettling experience. How is this possible in America in 2016? This is unacceptable.
Human rights advocate, 2012 Green Party vice presidential candidate Sherry Honkola says Trump is trying to stop the recount after having talked about the corrupt political system in our country. If he hadn't won the Electoral College, she says, he'd be spearheading the recount effort.
Trump's doing this after he came into my neighborhood, into Kensington, when people from the Trump campaign knew that none of the immigrants, the low-income folks, poor people of color in my community would probably not be voting for him. Soon we found in our neighborhood spray paint in various different areas, just the word Trump. Well, you know what? These were the areas where there was a history of racial conflict. If you are from Pennsylvania, you know our story. It is a long one. And it has been said that Pennsylvania is like Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Alabama in between. We are tired of the politics of intimidation and fear. And I'm speaking to all of you across the country, whether you're poor, Muslim, a returning citizen, an immigrant, living in a trailer park, or you're disabled, or you can't vote because you're from DC or Puerto Rico. We hear your cry. We think your votes matter. We think you matter. And we are not going to back down to fear.
Honkola says they won't back down until they restore fair elections in America. Zerlina Smith is an Illinois registered voter and state coordinator for the Green Party. Her grandparents fought for the right to vote. She wants to know why Trump is blocking recount efforts.
In a Democratic state, which I live in, we know that our machines were outdated. In black communities, we had two-hour waits to vote. In white communities, there were still a 20-minute wait with outdated voting machines. What do we say about the democracy in America, the civil rights that people have fought for to give people of color equal rights? We stand here in front of Trump Tower asking Trump to hold up to what he said to get people to stay home and not come out to vote. So he is now our newly elected president to stand behind the people as he served this term for 4 years to gain some type of trust and accountability for not being the clown that he was on his election campaign.
Jill Stein says they are standing for a vote which is accurate, secure, fair, and just, where every vote counts. She points to Michigan, where 75,000 voters who voted did not vote for a president. These are called undervoters, and they are an example, according to Stein, of a red flag.
At the center of the recount in Michigan is this question of some 75,000 blank votes, so-called undervotes, a large increase over all undervotes in prior elections by about 70%. raising the possibility that communities of color have been disenfranchised by an erroneous counting of the vote. These blank votes center particularly in the counties in which Detroit exists. And these blank votes vastly exceed the margin of difference between the two leading candidates. So these votes are important, and it's important that a miscount or a dismissal of votes in the communities of color not be contributing to an erroneous outcome. We say this because it's known that this is commonly what happens, that the votes in the communities of color are not only discouraged before they even come to the polls by being wiped off the voter rolls by things like interstate cross-check or by voter ID laws that discourage communities of color from coming out to vote, but also in the voting booth itself and in the counting of the votes.
Stein notes that the U.S. Civil Rights Commission established that the odds of your vote being miscounted or discounted through machine or human error is increased by about 900% if you are voting in a community of color.
So this is not simply an abstract concern. This is a very real concern that these votes from the communities of color be respected and that we affirm that they are not once again being tossed into the dustpan here and disrespected. So we are standing firm for the hard-won and hard-fought right to vote, particularly for people of color in this country.
Stein says it's very important to be able to examine the machines in Pennsylvania to make sure the electronic voting in that battleground state has not been compromised. It was a major victory for Standing Rock and a defeat for an energy company. The Army Corps of Engineers denied a key permit to the Dakota Access Pipeline. It won't be allowed to be drilled near the sacred land of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe in North Dakota under the Missouri River. WBAI's Earth Mom reports.
Thousands of people at the Ocheti Shekone Camp or Seven Council Fires Camp cheered and chanted, "Mini Wichoni. Water is life," in Lakota, after the Army Corps of Engineers refused Sunday to grant the Dakota Access Pipeline permission to extend the pipeline beneath the Missouri River. They formed a circle around the camp in prayer. It's been a long struggle. The first camp, Sacred Stone Camp, at Standing Rock, was set up back in April with a handful of people. Now there are multiple camps with as many as 12,000 water protectors at camp at one time, all of them steadfast in their determination to protect Mother Earth and prevent the Dakota Access Pipeline from being built. And on Sunday, water protectors got the word that the pipeline would not cross the Missouri River.
It's awesome. We had a victory power last night in the dome. Everybody celebrated all over camp. There's singing and awesome happiness going on.
Winona Castro, one of the head cooks at Ocheti Shekone Camp, who specializes in traditional Lakota food, said she is watchful of the energy company.
We're all staying, everybody's staying put until they get the pipeline out and that was totally gone.
Tons of people are just beyond happy right now.
Joy Braun of the Indigenous Environmental Network has been working tirelessly setting up camps at Standing Rock since last spring. Riding in a car on top of what is now called Facebook Hill, she looks out over the Ocheti Shekone Camp and Turtle Island, a small island across from camp that is an ancient sacred burial site.
I'm looking out over Turtle Island right now because I can see Turtle Island from my camp. And while Martin County Sheriff's Department and all the people that they brought in from the different sheriff's departments from around the country, they did pull back. They honored their word and they pulled back today. But as I look out over Turtle Island right now and across the ridge where many ancestors are buried, Dakota Access Pipeline security is lined up. I counted 7-8 cars that I can personally see right now. There's probably a whole lot more behind there that I can't see. There are a lot of other pipelines that are threatening us, and Dakota Access is still going to be a threat. Kelsey Warren has said that he didn't care about a permit, so we need to stay vigilant and watch over the next few days, few weeks, to make sure that he does not go under the Missouri River.
Braun thanked veterans who are standing in unity with the water protectors in sub-freezing weather.
I want to thank all the veterans. I got to run into some of our Cheyenne River veterans up by Media Hill.
Yeah.
And I got to thank them and see them. It's good to see people from home. I love that. I love when I get to see people from home. And it made me feel really happy that I got to share this day with some of our Cheyenne River veterans.
According to Bill McKibben of 350.org, the defeat of the Dakota Access Pipeline permit by Indigenous activists shows what nonviolent unity can accomplish. He says, from the start, this has been an against-all-odds battle. Energy Transfer Partners, the company building the pipeline, is as wired as they come. Its line of credit links it to virtually every bank you've ever heard of. Yeah. And by operating under a fast-track permit process, it managed to win most of its approval and lay most of its pipeline before opponents managed to mount an effective resistance. But opposition centered on the last place the pipeline would cross, the confluence of the Missouri and the Cannonball Rivers.
Earth Mum reporting for WBAI News. And while a symposium is going on with the CEO of Wells Fargo and Energy Transfer Partners president and vice president, as well as leaders from other top oil companies, there will be a rally in solidarity with Standing Rock in an effort to defund the Dakota Access Pipeline. While those inside are plotting to overcome challenges of building new pipeline structures, environmentalists will be rallying outside the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, 301 Park Avenue. This is from noon until 4 p.m. right in front of the Waldorf. It's being organized by New York City student activists Defund DAPL and Earth Guardians. It's endorsed by a range of groups, including Veterans for Peace and Climate Mobilization. This is on Tuesday. This is tomorrow, noon to 4 p.m., a rally in solidarity with Standing Rock. And this is the news on WBAI in New York. On Sunday, Fidel Castro's ashes were placed in a granite mausoleum. This was early Sunday morning during a private ceremony attended by his family and a handful of Latin American and African leaders. The brief ceremony in Santiago de Cuba ended 9 days of public mourning for the revolutionary leader who led Cuba for half a century. Here in New York, several hundred people gathered yesterday in front of Cuba's diplomatic mission to the United Nations to pay a tribute of their own. WBAI's Sally O'Brien was there, and she brings us some of the many varied voices.
Fidel Castro was interred next to the mausoleum of Cuban independence hero José Martí. In contrast to ceremonies held throughout last week that saw millions bid goodbye to Fidel, Sunday's event was brief, with no speeches and only family, a few close invitees, and government officials present. As reported by the Cuban news website Cuba Debate, the solemn interment began at 6:50 in the morning when Fidel Castro's ashes, held in a cedar urn, entered the cemetery gates. Near the administrative building, attendees, including Fidel's wife, Dalia Soto de Valle, and his brother, Army General Raul Castro Ruz, were lined up, and the urn was passed from his wife's hands to those of President Castro, who, writes Cuba Debate, places it against his chest and then raises it to the interior of the mausoleum, which was made from a boulder excavated from the town of Las Guasimas, east of Santiago. The mausoleum was sealed with a green marble plaque that says simply, Fidel. As the ceremony continued with a 21-gun salute, the voices of thousands could be heard in the distant Antonio Maceo Plaza chanting, Yo soy Fidel, I am Fidel. And it seems that those accolades traveled across the water to Lexington Avenue and 39th Street in Manhattan, where hundreds stood in the brisk winter day to pay respect to a leader who upheld the struggles of the poor and oppressed throughout the world. Many stood in a long line to enter the Cuban mission, where a condolence book was available for signing. As the following voices show, the gathering was diverse, multicultural, and intergenerational.
My name is Olga Sanabria Davila. I'm president of the Committee for Puerto Rico at the United Nations. And that brings me directly to the issue of the gratitude that the Puerto Rican people owe to Fidel and to Cuba and to the revolution for the steadfast support that Fidel led in order that Puerto Rico and the colonial case of Puerto Rico be presented at the international level, at the Movement of Non-Aligned Countries and at the United Nations. Besides the fact that we have to be in gratitude because Fidel actually really gave us a very high superior point of reference as to what is solidarity, what is sovereignty, what is verticality, what is struggle, what is the organization of a whole people.
I'm a Cuban-born person. I came here when I was 7 years old. My name is Miriam Clark. And I just support Fidel as a revolutionary. You know, I think he did a lot of great things for Cuba.
Manuel Melendez, I'm here today to celebrate the life of Fidel Castro and his contribution to the world, a new vision of a new society. And so in solidarity with the Cuban revolution and in solidarity with the Cuban people, we are here today to say thank you, Fidel, thank you, Cuba. Particularly, I am from Puerto Rico. Cuba and Puerto Rico for years. Cuba has been very supporting the Puerto Rican struggle for self-determination and liberation. So we thank Cuba, we thank Fidel, and we commit ourselves to continue the struggle until the victory.
Fidel Castro is one of the greatest world leaders for human rights and for his people. And this is a celebration of love. And the American government has demonized him for 50 years, tried to kill him, but they could not stop the revolution. So we're celebrating his life and his legacy, and we have to continue his fight.
And I see your hat says that you're an employee.
I'm a city worker. I work for the Communication Workers of America, Local 1180. We have 8,500 members, and we want to continue the fight against Trump and the racism in this country in Fidel's honor.
And here we are out here, and everybody seems to be in the same page that this is a memorial that is going to be in the hearts and minds for a long time. And you are a young person. What is it that compels you about the Cuban Revolution, and why are you here for Fidel Castro today?
I'm here for Fidel Castro because I'm an admirer of Fidel. I went to Cuba in 2009 with the Venceremos Brigade, and just always pretty much been grateful to how Fidel and the Cuban Revolution has embraced Puerto Rico and embraced Puerto Rican independence. So that's why I'm here today, as a thank you, and be in mourning with the people for Fidel and support the Cuban Revolution.
Can you describe what you're taking a picture of right now?
Yeah, well, it looks like a memorial to Fidel. I'm sure that the people who were entering brought flowers and different items to commemorate Fidel's passing and their feelings and sentiments about him. It's just very touching, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful outpour and demonstration of how we feel about Fidel.
Just want to pay homage to a mighty and great human leader of our time, of all time, actually. So it's an honor and a privilege to be able to be here with all these people, feeling all this solidarity and this spirit, renewed spirit.
Fidel, hermano, amigo, el mundo está contigo. Fidel, hermano, amigo, el mundo está contigo. Fidel, hermano, amigo, el mundo está contigo. Fidel, hermano.
Wow, gratitude. How grateful are so many of us for someone who gave us 90 years of sheer commitment, someone who showed us how to share, which is the essence of socialist principle and thought, but in practice, someone who showed us how to share, who showed us how to defend this incredible idea that brings people together across all backgrounds for the greater good of something that we're trying to figure out called humanity, if it will ever come. But if it does, we've got an incredible boost. If from the legacy of Fidel Castro and the leadership that he gave to the incredible, selfless human entity and that is the Cuban Revolution. Gave us so much, all of them, so much with so little. The heart, principle, and anything they have, they share.
Who are? Teresa Gutierrez with the Rockefeller Party. It did hit me personally hard. I had a hard weekend adjusting to it, even though all the things that are said about how Fidel will never die, like Che, like Malcolm, are all absolutely true. But we still mourn the loss of a great individual. I think the main thing that I'm hearing from his speeches and from Evo and from Correa and from Raul and all the leaders and all the activists is that now is the time to study the ideas of Fidel. And here in the United States, with the battle that we have in front of us to fight the Trump agenda and the rise of the right wing, I think studying Fidel's ability to unite everybody, you know, I just read an article about Fidel in the early days of the revolution before the triumph, about how he didn't just unite with revolutionaries. He united with liberals and even those that were reactionaries, because he knew that you needed to unite everybody to defeat Batista. And those kinds of examples are the things we have to study about Fidel in this coming period. And I mourn his loss, but I feel confident that the Cuban Revolution and Raul and the Cuban people are strong and steadfast, and that together we will look to and build a new day. And that's the greatest legacy that we can pay Fidel, is to continue the struggle in his name.
I'm known as Cyril Lennox Jr., but in the Panther Party, I'm known as Brother Bullwhip. And I'm here today because I'm giving honoring to Fidel Castro, who to me, as far as I'm concerned, was the last of one of our greatest leaders in this world today. He epitomized what revolution should be and how a person should stand to fight for all the people. Also, he showed me a true understanding of how to, the brown man, the red man, the yellow man, let's say the Rainbow Coalition can come together and make a difference in this world. This Comandante is now going from us physically, but he will always be here spiritually, in our hearts, in our mind, in our soul, and into the next generation, because we will win this fight.
I came here to honor Fidel Castro for the good job he have done for the humanity, and I want to say to Viva Fidel, Viva Cuba, Viva la Revolución Haití.
My name's Lisa Daniel, and I'm here today to show my respect for Fidel, my great gratitude for what he did, also to lend my voice to an effort to counter the misinformation that's in the U.S. media right now, which is not presenting the true accomplishments of Fidel, of Cuba, nor the true sentiments of the U.S. people.
Sally O'Brien, WBAI News, New York.
That's the WBAI Evening News for Monday, December 5th, 2016. The news was produced with Earth Mum, Sally O'Brien, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.